This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Climate protesters tell us the fight over a controversial coal mine isn't over. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Will Bain. Thanks for being back with us. The German village of Lützerath has been the front line in recent weeks in the latest climate battle. Pitched in the trees above an underground coalfield, hundreds of protesters from across Europe, including the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. On the other, the German government and one of the continent's largest energy firms, RWE, who own the land and want to expand their open-cast lignite coal mine to try and bolster Germany's power supplies so impacted by the war in Ukraine. Early this week, police forcibly cleared protesters, but according to Luisa Neubauer, one of Germany's best-known climate activists, the fight has only just begun.
I would say it's a frightening scene because the place there, the coal mine on the one side and the village on the other side, it's one of those rare settings where you really see at some point it's black and white in the climate crisis. On the one side you have the destruction and on the other side you have the justice. And this is the time for people to take sides here.
What happens now, Luisa?
Well, the coal is still in the ground. And as long as the coal is in the ground, in this particular mine, we will, of course, fight for that coal to stay there. And that is something that at least the Green Party in Germany has now agreed to, that they are interested in as well. They do want this coal to stay in the ground. For them, this means, you know, building up the renewables to replace the coal. For us, it means really working towards a moratorium, towards an end of that coal mine that is put in place.
Would you go back to the mine to protest again to stop that coal coming out of the ground?
Yes, of course. There will be more protests happening. And what we see really is that people are enticed by this. People from all generations, farmers, industries, you know, grandparents and children, everyone has seen with their own eyes what is being possible. So what we will see, of course, is another wave of climate action happening, not just in this coal mine, but really in every single sector involved.
Russia's war in Ukraine has changed everything about European energy security, and actually countries are scrambling. And I think even the German government accepts this isn't the best option. It's just one of the few options that they had.
Well, we are in an energy crisis and there needs to be readjustment happening. However, the coal that is now being granted to be digged up, that won't be available to anyone within the next 2 or 3 years. So it's not a short-term solution. That is a long-term energy policy that is being made here. The coal is way too deep in the ground, 60, 70 meters down. So here we see that the argument of an energy crisis being used, in fact, to protect the profits of the coal company behind it and get us deeper into coal dependencies.
That same company is also one of the world's biggest spenders on renewables, and I'm sure its argument would be, well, we need funds from somewhere to keep funding what is in a very expensive transition.
Using the argument of more climate destruction to eventually stop climate destruction, that's not working out. And after all, the question behind all that is, who makes the rules for the energy transition? And if governments have plans, and they technically do have plans to stay in line with the Paris Agreement, they need to make sure that energy companies stick to those plans and not make up their own rules in favor of their profits.
Luisa Neubauer, climate activist in Berlin, thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Important to say, we invited RWE onto the programme, but they declined our interview request. This weekend is amongst the biggest in Asia's calendar, the Lunar New Year. And for those in China, it means millions of trips across the country to see loved ones. The BBC's Katie Silver explains more.
Over the entire course of the Chinese New Year period, which could be up to about 30 days, they could see in the order of 2 billion trips, for example, visiting family, as well as tourism trips. And that's going to provide China's economy with an economic boost at a time that it really needs it. You know, after 3 years of restrictions, the recent growth figures from China have been among the lowest that we've seen since 1976 under the time of Mao Zedong. So the economy needs it, from people going home, as I say, to see their families, to tourism spends, as well as, of course, a big part of the Lunar New Year festivities is this concept of out with the old and in with the new. Part of that can also mean possessions, and that can mean spending.
Well, as we head to the numbers now, Asian shares have finished the week up ahead of the Lunar New Year. Shanghai Composite Index up 0.6%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong closed up just shy of 2%. Big news, though, in the past hour coming out of Davos, too. Alphabet Inc., the parent company of Google, is eliminating 12,000 jobs, its chief executive said in a staff memo seen by the BBC. In it, they said, "We hired for a different economic reality from the one we face today." It was meant to usher in a new era in British car making, a giant factory making thousands of batteries a year for electric vehicles to be sold around the world. But this week, British Volt, the company behind the project, went bust. The project has been lauded by the UK government as a shining example of green energy transition. So what went wrong? The BBC's Katie Barnfield took a look.
So it's time to power up the future.
This advert from British Volt was full of promises, but its battery-powered vision is now dead. The company was meant to build a giant factory on the site of an old power station in Blyth in northeast England. The battery packs made there were supposed to power a new generation of electric vehicles. But after repeated delays to construction and finally running out of money, the company collapsed. Former Aston Martin boss Andy Palmer said it was a huge blow for the future of UK car making.
I would call it an unmitigated disaster for the auto industry in the UK. Cars are, by 2030, mandated in the UK to move to electric, and we don't have the battery capacity to support that. And that means, ultimately, the British car manufacturing will migrate to where the battery factories are, which is going to be in Central Europe.
The project was championed by the British government. It was offered £100 million, around $124 million in public funding. But the money never came. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said there weren't enough other investors to foot the bill as well.
We did offer significant support to British Volt, but entirely reasonably, that support was conditional on the company receiving private investment as well.
British Volt was a start-up. Its battery technology was still at the prototype stage. And despite expressions of interest from Lotus and Aston Martin, it didn't have any big car makers on board. Professor David Bailey from the Birmingham Business School said the hurdles were just too much.
This was always a very difficult thing for British Volt to do. You know, it didn't have a proven track record on technology. It wasn't clear where the £4 billion of investment would come from to finance the factory, and it had no big customers.
The factory was supposed to generate 3,000 jobs. Now, British Volt's nearly 300 staff have lost theirs. People in Blyth, which has long suffered from high unemployment, are not happy.
I think it's disgusting because they're taking employment away from a bad area, aren't they, you know?
Yeah, son-in-law, he's an engineer. He applied for a job there, so I don't know what's going to happen.
I think it's terrible because they need jobs around here. People are fed up, you know, the way it's going on at the minute, and they need to do some for jobs.
There is still hope that new investors could step in and rescue the factory, but they'll need deep pockets if this dream for British industry is ever going to be realised. I'm the BBC's Katie Barnfield for Marketplace.
And Tom and James have been our team in the studio here. Our editor's been Joe Critcher. Thanks so much for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.